And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. Hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're so glad that you can join us. Make sure you go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. With me, as always, is my co-host, Alex Spears. And Alex, tell us what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, the week kicked off with a couple days of mega blowouts. On Friday and Saturday, there were five games decided by 30 or more points, none more dramatic than a Friday night contest between the Toronto Raptors and the Golden State Warriors, a game in which the Raptors hit 100 points before Golden State had scored 50. The Warriors ended up losing by 53, kicking off another amazing week in the ongoing saga of Warriors fans versus Steve Kerr. On Saturday morning, the first trailer dropped for Space Jam, A New Legacy, starring LeBron James. Reactions to the trailer range from, hey, this looks pretty good, to, I'm an adult and here's what the cartoon movie means for the GOAT debate. On Sunday, it was Easter, and we learned that Drew Holiday had signed a four-year, $160 million deal to stay with the Milwaukee Bucks. We also saw the first win for the new-look Bulls, an impressive 115-107 win over the Brooklyn Nets. The Bulls now have won three in a row. On Monday, ESPN announced they were parting ways with NBA analyst and Celtics champion Paul Pierce. This after Pierce streamed a board game night he was having with some friends. Video showed Pierce playing games, enjoying some snacks, and dancing with friends. On Tuesday, in his second game back from a prolonged injury absence, Joel Embiid dropped 35 in a 106-96 win over the Celtics. On Wednesday, Kevin Durant made his long-awaited return from injury, scoring 17 in 19 minutes against the Pelicans. We also had a Game of the Year candidate, an overtime thriller, between the teams with the two best records in the league, the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz. Chris Paul scored 17 of his 29 points in the fourth quarter in overtime to give the Suns a 117-113 win over the Jazz. And finally, on Thursday, the Los Angeles Clippers, our Los Angeles Clippers, capped off a 3-0 week with a win over those same Phoenix Suns. The Clips are now only two back of the Suns for the second seed and have won 10 of their last 13. What a week, Andrew.
You have the wheel to thank, Clippers fans. Thank the wheel for doing its job again this week. Want to give a shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks for that Drew Holiday deal. Listen, if you're killing the Bucks for that, you should have been killing them from the beginning for even trading for him, because you have to do that extension if you trade for him. You just have to.
Oh, for sure. Drew had all the leverage there. It was already set in stone when that trade was made.
So if you're poo-pooing that, just stop. Let's see what they do in the playoffs, and then maybe you can poo-poo it later. Yeah. I want to talk about the most interesting thing that entered my brain this week in the NBA, and it's definitely not the most interesting thing to most people, but the Memphis Grizzlies, they're on a four-game win streak. They completely destroyed the Red Hot Hawks, which they just came out and just destroyed them in the third quarter. They had 18 points behind Grayson Allen, which was really a fun game. They're easily in the eighth seed. They'll make the play-in for sure, have the possibility to make the actual playoffs. They're 26-23, and they also have the 22nd easiest schedule moving forward, and this is all without Jaren Jackson Jr., which I think is the most impressive thing, because they really struggled without him last year. And also, Ja Morant hasn't had the best season this year. He hasn't lit the world on fire. And so to me, like, huge shouts to Memphis for what they've done this year, I think it's been impressive.
Yeah, they're a fascinating team because by all accounts, this rebuild post grit and grind era has gone amazingly well. They're incredibly deep. They've got the two stars with Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr. Honestly, the only downside of this entire rebuild has been those injuries to him and to Justice Winslow. I guess the question is, looking at this roster, where outside of Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr., where can they raise their ceiling? Which of those many, many guys who we all think are like NBA rotation players, which of those guys could potentially make that jump to push this team further in these coming seasons?
Yeah, so for this season, balance has been key for them. They've had 11 different leading scorers on this team this year. And they just have a lot of guys. They're stacked with guys. Dylan Brooks is averaging 16 points per game, and nobody talks about him. Jonas Valanciunas has had a great season with 16 and 12. Kyle Anderson has played very well for them, 12, 5, and 3. Brandon Clark, like, I think you could think of Brandon Clark as a possible guy for that, but that's not my guy. That's not my ceiling-raising guy. Grayson Allen, solid player, solid shooter. Desmond Bane, another negative wingspan, solid shooter guy that's going to be a role player. Xavier Tillman, Justice Winslow, if you can ever get it together. And then you have like your way into the bench, like kind of interesting, very skilled guys and John Conchar and Killian Tilly. I like Killian Tilly a lot. I just don't think he'll be able to play in the league for very long just because of health reasons. But none of those guys are my ceiling raiser.
Wow, you just named a lot of guys though.
I named a lot of guys. This guy was basically traded in the salary dump of Josh Jackson from the Suns. The trade was Josh Jackson, this guy, for Javon Carter, Kyle Korver, and the Phoenix sent over 2 second-round picks for this guy. This guy was selected 46th overall in the NBA draft. The Stepien had him 12th overall in that draft.
So they were
in early on this guy, and it is D'Anthony Melton. I think D'Anthony Melton, first of all, hashtag free D'Anthony Melton. Get this guy some minutes. He's missed a lot of games this season due to injury, but he only plays 19 minutes per game. We've got to up that. So the knock on Melton coming into the NBA was that he's not a shooter, that he is not going to be able to help you in that way. He's a really nice defender. He can play make a little bit. He's very active. The guy is taking 4 threes per game at 45% from 3. This guy's a real shooter. He has the best effective field goal percentage on the team by far. He's shooting better at the rim than Jonas Valanciunas. And yet, he's only playing 19 minutes per game.
Why is that then? If you're so high on it, why do the Grizzlies not see this?
My question is that I don't know. Taylor Jenkins, I'm calling Taylor Jenkins out. Let's get this guy some more minutes, because I think that if you're going to talk about any of the guys on this team being the ceiling riser, to me, it's D'Anthony Melton, and he fits pretty well as a shooter, as a guy who defends well next to Ja. He's 88th percentile in points per shot in the league. He's second on their team in on-off plus-minus with a plus 6.5. He's helping them win. Grizzly Bear Blues put out an article this morning on D'Anthony Melton, and here's what he wrote, and some of this I've already said, but that D'Anthony Melton has become an elite shooter. He's shooting 45% from three on 4 attempts per game, which is first on the Grizzlies and 7th overall in the entire NBA. He has the best true shooting percentage and the best effective field goal percentage on the team. And he's shooting 57% on mid-range shots and a ridiculous 68% at the rim, which is better than Valanciunas, and has now improved to where he's shooting a superb 43% on pull-up jumpers. So this is not just some defender off the bench. This is a guy who's been a legitimately great shooter for them. So to me, there is a Grayson Allen infatuation there, which I don't quite get. I'm not quite getting it. Give me more D'Anthony Melton. Free D'Anthony Melton. That's my most interesting thing this week, is that this guy needs to be freed. He's been counted out too many times. At the draft, there was only one website that believed in him. That was the Step In, right? Falls all the way to the mid-second round. He got traded for nothing. Javon Carter. Come on.
And they gave up 2 seconds.
And they gave up 2 seconds. And now, a team that, and maybe he's playing more. He's been out with injury. But Taylor Jenkins, a few games ago, said that he wanted the Grizzlies to take more threes. He wanted to boost the amount of threes that they were taking. And in this win streak, they've made at least 15 threes in each game. I think they've made upwards of 19 threes in a game, which is big time for this team because they are bottom five consistently. Since really the inception of Grizzlies, they have been right. Bottom five in three-pointers made in the league. And so they're starting to uptick that. And I think D'Anthony Melton's got to be a part of that crew to help them get there.
Is this something that, is this bubbling up in Grizzlies world? Like, are Grizzlies fans, do they want to see more D'Anthony Melton as well?
Yes.
I mean, obviously
yes.
They're writing articles about him.
Yeah, they're writing articles about it. My guy, Keith Parrish, who does Grits and Grinds, it's a Grizzlies podcast. He also hosts the Fast Break Breakfast podcast, is a huge D'Anthony Melton guy. And I'm hopping on the train. I'm not leading the train, but I'm on it. And we want more D'Anthony Melton.
Wow. Well, we have just brought the D'Anthony Melton train to even more people. So it's about to get very crowded. Okay. Well, that was, you convinced me, Andrew. I mean, when you told me you were going to go over the Grizzlies, I was like, interesting. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
You were like, really? You said, I think you said something like, I know nothing about the Grizzlies.
I haven't watched a lot of Grizzlies this year, yeah. Even as much as I like Ja Morant. Okay, well, my most interesting thing this week starts with a nugget. And I know what you're thinking, Andrew, didn't you do the Nuggets last week? Not that kind of nugget, Andrew. You fool. I'm talking about a nugget of information that was passed along to us by The Athletic's own Sam Amick and John Hollinger, who wrote a piece this week about the 2021 free agency class. And they wrote this: at first glance, one might think it unwise for a 36-year-old NBA player to turn down $44.2 million if given the choice. But Chris Paul, who will turn 36 on May 6th, has indeed played his way into a world where turning down that massive player option and securing another massive deal now makes all sorts of sense. Or, as we wrote in these pages on Monday, he could agree to an extension now and add 2 years onto his current deal while picking up the aforementioned player option. Now, why is this interesting? Honestly, Andrew, I had never considered that as an option until this week. And now that I've thought more about it, it makes a lot of sense. And I feel like it could potentially have a significant effect on this summer's free agency. But before we go there, let's rewind a little bit. So back on July 1st, 2018, Chris Paul signs the current deal he's on. 4 years, $160 million contract with the Rockets. Just 1 year later, after a second playoff exit at the hands of the Warriors, the contract had become so bad that the Rockets had to send two draft picks and two pick swaps in a trade for Russell Westbrook. And it was later reported that Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta had been telling people that Chris Paul's contract was the worst he'd seen in sports and business. In business, Andrew. Well, what happened since? Chris Paul led the Thunder to their best winning percentage in the post-KD era, taking the Thunder to the playoffs in a seven-game series against the Rockets. He then got traded for good stuff. He got a first-round pick. They got Kelly Oubre, who the Thunder flipped into a likely second-round pick. They flipped Ricky Rubio into what became Alexei Pokushevsky. So all of a sudden, he had this value, and then he's proven that again in a second season with the Phoenix Suns, who are now the number two seed in the Western Conference, 36-15 record, made his second All-Star game in a row. He's only missed three games in the last two seasons, which was one of the big knocks when he was traded for Russell Westbrook. And that Suns-Jazz game on Thursday night was, I guess it was on Wednesday night, was a great example of how good he's been. He was 29-9 against the best team in the league. Just an absurd display of mid-range shot-making, clutch shots, him being goofy when he tried to give Donovan Mitchell a high five after missing a free throw. It was like the entire Chris Paul experience.
He was the best player on the floor that night. Yeah.
He was. So now we look at the 2021 free agency landscape. What are the things we know? We know it's a relatively weak class for a couple reasons. A lot of the veterans have already signed, whether it's Giannis or Jrue Holiday, Paul George last summer. Two of the bigger names, and this came up actually in that article as well, are likely to stay with their teams, talking about Kawhi Leonard and Mike Conley. Yep. So what are you left with? You're left with veterans like DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, and then some pretty good but also restricted free agents, Lonzo Ball, John Collins. You don't know if you're actually going to be able to get them. Overall, it's a weak class. We also know that there's a lot of teams who are going to have a decent amount of cap space. So if he opts out, is Chris Paul the best realistic free agent on the market? And after thinking about it, I think the answer is yes. So let's go into, let's just cover some realistic suitors. Obviously, the most realistic suitor is the Phoenix Suns. It would make sense for him to stay there. He's eligible actually to sign an extension right now, today.
Yep.
And Phoenix is having their best season in over a decade. In fact, you have to go back to the 2006-2007 season to find a Suns team with a better winning percentage. So I do think it makes sense. And if I was, you know, handicapping it, I would say, obviously, I might put it at like 70% or more that he would stay with the Suns. But it's more about like, oh my gosh, Chris Paul has way more leverage. And this kind of Chris Paul experiment with the Suns might be lasting for many more years than I initially anticipated. But then we go into some other suitors. What about the Knicks? The Knicks are going to have max cap space. They need a point guard. They're firmly in win now mode. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yes, I would.
And they could offer Chris Paul his max, which is $124 million over 3 years, while still having $20 million or so left over to bring in more help. Now, we know that his former agent, Leon Rose, now heading up the Knicks. This is one that we kind of talked about last summer. And one of the complicating factors in a lot of these is that one of the reasons we heard why Chris Paul might want to go to Phoenix is because it's closer to his family in LA. So obviously going to the Knicks for a 3-year guaranteed contract wouldn't necessarily solve that. But there are some other suitors. What about the Mavericks? They're projected to have about $35 million in space if Josh Richardson opts out of his $11 million deal. Could the Mavs offer a 3-year deal worth $110 million? It's possible. And then you look at the Heat. They're projected to have about $25 million if they don't sign Oladipo or Kendrick Nunn, and they decline some team options on like Iggy and Dragic. That one seems less possible, but maybe if Chris Paul played out his contract, that would become more realistic, because I do think you have to wonder, if he just played out his current contract, that $44 million he got next year, what do you think he could get on the open market next season? I'm thinking like the Kyle Lowry deal, like what we've heard Kyle Lowry is asking for, which is like 2 years, $50 million.
Yeah, 250, so, 260.
For something like that.
I mean, Chris Paul has been a lot better than Kyle Lowry has been.
He has. So. And one complicating factor in all of this that they brought up in the article is the over 38 rule. Uh-huh. So this limits the extent of any deal he can sign this summer, because he'll turn 38 very soon, or within the duration of this next contract. So he can only sign a 3-year deal in free agency, because I was actually thinking, like, why wouldn't a team just offer him a crazy 4-year deal,
right,
knowing that it'll probably, you know, not be great at the end of it, but it'll be lower cost per year. Because the other idea here is there are some unrealistic suitors. You know, we've heard about the Lakers and the Clippers. Those names came up last summer, and it still feels very unrealistic. But there is this idea that there's a team out there, the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are going to have barely anything on their roster in terms of money this summer. And could they be a dumping ground for a team that looks at Chris Paul, if he actually was in free agency, and says, man, if we could dump a few of these contracts to Oklahoma City, we could actually make an offer to Chris Paul. So I just found this super interesting, because when Chris Paul signed that contract, when he was traded to Oklahoma City, even when he was traded to the Suns, it never entered my mind that he would ever turn down that player option. And now, looking at the free agency class coming up and the landscape, it actually makes a lot of sense. And that in and of itself is super interesting to me.
Yeah, the hope with the player option was maybe he'll opt out because he just wants a better situation and he'll go sign for $10 million with the Lakers. Now, that was always the thought, if there was any hope of an opt out. And it is so intriguing, because it puts the Suns in a really interesting situation. They're going to have to make a big decision with Chris Paul a lot sooner than they thought they would have to. Mm-hmm. And the history of the Suns says that they don't really want to pay up. And if they lose him, all this progress and momentum that has been built is stunted big time. And you, man, they cannot let him go to the Mavs. Like that's right, the one that I'm looking at, and I'm just saying, man, they cannot let that happen. They just can't. And I honestly can see it happening, because I think they're like pseudo contenders. The Suns are. We talked about this. They're kind of at the lower level of the contenders. But then, if he went and played with Luka, and he was playing at this level, like, they may be like real contenders. That might be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, the other, from Phoenix's aspect, it's not just that Chris Paul improved your team. Because before the season, I think a lot of us were saying, oh, yeah, I'm high on the Suns, and I could see them being like the fifth or fourth seed. Like, yeah, they have so far exceeded even the biggest optimist's expectations that I feel like the Suns just have to re-sign. They have to make this a long-term deal with Chris Paul because he's been so good. To.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's up their game. Devin Booker has been much better this year as a scorer, as a defender, just as a guy who gives effort everywhere. You look at DeAndre Ayton, who has played well lately. I thought he played really, really well throughout this week. And he's setting good screens. I think he's playing with a little bit more aggression here and there. He's like the biggest wild card. And then they have tons of great role players. I mean, the Jay Crowder addition was great. The Torrey Craig addition, which didn't feel like it was going to be anything because he didn't play hardly at all for the Bucks, he's been legitimately good for them. So, I mean, they've got a ton of momentum, and they can build on this. And even if Chris starts declining some, they have Devin Booker who can fill in the gaps. They have DeAndre Ayton who's getting better. I'm impressed, but I just hope that the ownership group doesn't do what they've always done throughout the history of the Suns and screw this up.
Yeah, you make a good point that, like, Chris Paul, more than maybe any other player, is best suited for still giving you a ton of value in a reduced role as he gets older. So he really is like a perfect fit for them.
It's perfect.
Okay, Andrew, it is time to celebrate some birthdays.
Blow out the candles, get your cake, and eat it too. It's the birthday bash. It's your birthday. Somebody in here, it's your birthday. It's your birthday. Somebody in
here, it's your birthday. It's your birthday. Everybody move like it's your birthday. Andrew, after the first 6 weeks, you are an even 500. 15 and 15. It's a coin flip, Andrew.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But I'm actually feeling good about your chances this week. So let's jump right into it with two rookies. I think this one's... You gotta get this one, Andrew.
I better.
Sadiq Bey, Kyra Lewis Jr.
Kyra Lewis is younger.
That is correct. Kyra Lewis turning 20 this week. Sadiq Bey turning 22. What about Spencer Dinwiddie, Dario Saric?
Saric is younger.
Yes, two for two, Andrew. You're on a hot streak. But this one is tough. Frank Kaminsky, Justin Holiday.
Oh, weird. I've never thought of those two in the same... I have no connections in my brain to those two. I'll say Frank is younger.
Okay, that's what I would have guessed too. Just tell me if you would guess Justin Holiday's age, what would you guess it at?
26? I don't know.
He's 32.
No! Justin is?
Yeah, he's 32 years old.
Justin Holiday's 32.
That was shocking to me. I mean, obviously there's three Holiday brothers, so I mean, maybe I'm just getting them mixed up in my head. But I did not realize that a Holiday brother was 32.
That is wild. No, I had no idea. I bet my life on that I'd be dead.
In fact, I'm making sure. I'm going on to Basketball Reference right now just because I don't believe it. Yes, it is true. He is 32 years old. Okay.
Wow. Fake young guy. He's been a fake young guy since he was born, apparently.
Yes. Okay. What about Chetty Osman, Daniel Tice?
Oh, weird. Chetty's younger.
That is correct. Daniel Tice is 29. Another one that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah.
All right, and last one, jumping in the time machine, Steven Jackson, Matt Bonner.
Oh, Matt Bonner's younger?
He is. Andrew, you got 4 out of 5. Matt Bonner turned 41, woo! Steven Jackson turning 43. Wow, that was great, Andrew. You are back in the game. You are now 19 and 16.
Wow. I'm feeling good. It's a great day. It's going to be a great day. And it's going to get even better because right after this break, we're going to talk about the Clippers.
All right, Andrew, what is that time of the week? Time to enter the Wheel of Fandom, the segment each week where we spin a digital wheel. It chooses a team at random, and we follow that team for the next week. Last week, the Wheel of Fandom chose the Los Angeles Clippers, currently 35-18, second in offense, 10th in defense. What happened this week? Well, the Clippers went 3-0. They beat the Lakers, they beat the Blazers, and they beat the Suns. An amazing week for the Clippers. So, Andrew, if the Wheel of Fandom chose the Los Angeles Clippers, who is our guest today?
It's my guy, Law Murray. Law, what's up?
What is happening? Good to have a chance to talk to you guys.
So glad that you're with us. First question, this is your first year on the beat. I want to know how Clippers fans have treated you. What are your Twitter mentions like?
Man, you know, for the most part, it's been great, actually. But I was watching the Jazz-Suns game Wednesday night.
Yep.
And that was a great game. I think objectively, if you're an objective observer fan of the game, that was a great game. I was like, you know what? These teams might mess around and get to the playoffs. They, after all, they are the best two teams in the league record-wise. They're at the top of the West, 1-2. If they meet in a 7-game series, you watching, everybody watching, it will be highly competitive. It will be great. I messed around and said that. And a whole bunch of people got in their feelings about it. they were like, you were poor for the Clippers. And I was like, I didn't even say this because, you know, I'm a smart person and I don't feed the trolls. But yeah. I was going to be like, bro, I report for the Athletic. I just cover the Clippers. A lot of people, they think that you have to be like on their side and whatnot. And it's like, sometimes you do, and sometimes you got gas for them. So, you know, you got to keep it real with yourself, and you got to keep it real with people every now and again. But like I said, I don't really feed the trolls. I just do my thing. And I think doing my thing has worked out for me. So, you know, shout out to everybody who supports and who's reading. And all the people who understand what we're here for.
Yep. So, Law, this was a pretty awesome week to get the Clippers because we got some high-profile games. We also got the debut of Rajon Rondo. Now, it's still regular season Rondo, but we did see something pretty close to playoff Rondo, which is playing Chris Paul Rondo. What have been your early thoughts on the Rondo experience, and how important do you think he's going to be for the Clippers' success going forward?
Well, the funny thing is he was assistant coach Rondo for like a week before we actually got to see him play. And that actually mattered. You know, he got to come in here mid-season and understand the situation that he's in. I mean, he has some relationships built in, and I think we can all attest to the importance of the interpersonal relationships even at this level of basketball and what that will mean, especially for a team with expectations. So, you know, he's coming in here. He knows the coaching staff. He knows a couple players, but like coming in midseason, even a vet of his caliber, it's not always the most ideal thing. Like you remember Dallas, you know, he came in midseason there and there was no playoff Rondo. That's great. Yeah. So this time around, like he came in, he got acclimated, very small role. But last night was a big turning point for him. He's progressed every game. He's shown a little bit more every game. Last night was, and I wrote a little bit about it. The game was much bigger than Rondo last night, but that fourth quarter was not. Rondo really took over last night. And if that's something that you get in a game during a 7-game series, obviously we see how that can flip. The Rockets found that out last year.
Yep. The Clippers right now are 35-18. And more importantly, they have a 60-win pace when Kawhi and PG have both played. They currently have the second best odds on BetMGM to win the West this year. Do you agree with that? And what are the biggest differences between this year's team and last year's team? Is it Ty Lue? Is it the team mentality? Is it they got some of those guys that were maybe malcontents off the team? Like, where would you put that?
I can't lie on here and say that I'm expecting the Clippers to make it out of the West. I think that would be I actually think that would be overachieving for them. It's natural. I mean, the team won only one playoff series last year. Right now, they're not in the top two of the West. They have work to do. Do I believe they have the potential to get to that point? Absolutely. You mentioned Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the floor together. Last time I checked, they were the best duo playing significant minutes in the NBA. I know some people in this city get sensitive about stuff like that, but I mean, you know, facts are facts. So, you know, we'll see how significant those facts are. When it comes to the difference between this year's team and last year's team, Tyronn Lue does make an impact. Doc Rivers joked about it early in the season, but even when Doc came back here last weekend, you know, he attested to it. Not even last weekend. It's been 2 weeks. This team's been home for so long now. You talk about days running together. It's like, how about not getting on a plane in the middle of the regular season for 2 weeks? Like, the Clippers have really been taking advantage of that. But even Doc was like, yeah, like there's a difference there. There's a difference in how the team is using personnel. There's a difference in mentality and poise. And yeah, guys do like each other. Not to say that they didn't like each other last year. That wasn't the problem. The problem was you had a clash of a previous era and how that team was led and how that team won. You know, it's different. If you losing, that's one thing. But when you won and then you bring in these two other guys, you can say, oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, play your game. And they were good for the most part. They were second in the West for a reason last year. But this year they have the added emphasis, the added motivation, even if it's not expressed externally all the time, of what happened last year in the bubble. You know, just like the Lakers the year before, like, you know why they were so focused last year and wound up going to the bubble, winning championship, all that? It's because the year before they were basically wasting LeBron James' prime with all the dysfunction and drama that they had going on. When you embarrass yourself, when you humiliate yourself, and you come back the next year with a certain group of guys, you tend to be a little bit more focused on, here's what we're not going to do. Here's what we're going to control. Because there's a lot of things outside of the control. And for the Clippers, it's injuries, it's lineup changes, it's you know, we're already anticipating some extenuating circumstances blowing up the Clippers season. We don't know what it is yet. We're just like, oh, something's going to happen. But you know what? The things that the Clippers can control, they've done a really good job this year of controlling. And that gives, and Ty Lue should get credit for that too.
Yeah, for sure. So if the playoffs started today, the Clippers would get to avoid the Jazz, Lakers, and Nuggets until the conference finals, which I'm assuming is the ideal playoff scenario for the Clippers. But if you could avoid those teams, are there any potential first-round opponents in that scenario that would cause significant worry for the Clippers?
I don't believe the Clippers really want to see the Mavericks again, to be honest with you. The Mavericks, everyone's going to remember the 51-point game, really the 50-point half. That game was over at halftime. It's rare you can start writing at halftime. That game, you can start writing at halftime. I wasn't writing. I wasn't at the Athletic just yet. That was back in December when Kawhi didn't play. But even when Kawhi and Paul George were on the floor together, St. Patrick's Day last month, I mean, the Mavericks held them under 100 points. The Mavericks have been oddly efficient defensively. We saw it against the Jazz earlier this week. And the Clippers saw it on a couple of occasions. The Mavericks, for whatever reason, they do a good job matching up defensively with this Clippers team, as you'd expect a team to be able to do when they ended their season last year. So that was the 2-7 last year, Clippers-Mavericks. I'm not saying that the Clippers are incapable of beating the Mavericks. They showed that they can. But I think that would be a more challenging matchup for them than, say, the 3-6 right now with Portland. They really also shouldn't be trying to face the Nuggets, but we're not talking about that right now.
Yeah, it seems like Portland's a great matchup for them just because of Portland's kind of general lack of size on the wings. And we saw it this week. I mean, they really dominated the Blazers.
The Trailblazers, I actually was intrigued in that game going in of Portland's potential to defend better, because with Norm Powell and coming from Toronto, along with Robert Covington, it gives them some guys who force turnovers, which the Portland Trailblazers historically have been very disinterested in forcing turnovers. But that just, again, the Clippers are really good at protecting the ball this year, and they really exposed the Portland Trailblazers defense earlier this week.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on there's just a little group of guards on this team, and I don't really know what to expect with them come playoff time. You've got Kennard, you got Terrence Mann, you got Reggie Jackson. Reggie seems to have kind of emerged as like the scorer off the bench. But well, what are your thoughts on that trio, and how do they kind of move forward with them?
Well, unfortunately for Lou Kennard, I mean, he's the 12th man right now. He's going to be used in a pinch, in an emergency, if those extenuating circumstances means that somebody's got to play. I mean, Luke's won them games this year. He has exclusively won them games this year. Just look at the Hawks game, Rondo's last game with the Hawks. Yeah. He saw it.
Yep.
And it's like, it's a numbers game. He's literally the 12th man on this team. That isn't a comment on Luke Kennard. It's a comment on the depth that this team has accumulated. Terrence Mann has played himself into a second stringer. Like when this season started, he was the 12th man. He showed a skill set, a level of improvement, a level of juice and verve that the rest of this roster doesn't really have. And that allowed him to play as a second stringer. But again, because of the way that this team is constructed now that they're fully healthy, he's not playing the same minutes as he was even a week ago. I mean, I think he has not eclipsed 10 minutes back-to-back games for the first time since Paul George first started missing time due to the foot issue, which brings us to Reggie Jackson. When the Rondo trade was made, it's natural to compare the guy to who you traded for. And what I'm telling people to do is Reggie Jackson replaced Lou Williams, not Rajon Rondo. So you're exactly right. I'm looking at Reggie as a shooting guard now. When he was in Oklahoma City, he was that kind of guy. He came into the league as kind of a tweener, a combo guard. And we've evolved our discussion of basketball to the point where a tweener used to be a bad thing, right? It's like, oh, we don't know what to do with you, and we're struggling to put you in a box. But now the game is a lot more flexible. And so a guy with a certain skill set can do more and be encouraged to do more based off of who's he's on the floor with. And he's going to be asked to score more, and he's fully capable of doing that at a pretty high level considering the bench role.
So last question for you, Law. Obviously the biggest story around the Clippers, at least on social media for the past year, has been Paul George. He's just taken a beating on social media going back to last playoffs. How do you think he's handled that this season? And then are you confident that he can change that narrative in the playoffs?
Am I confident about changing the narrative in the playoffs? There's always going to be reason to hesitate because Paul's had some he's dealing with a foot issue, and we've just seen that thing flare up twice. He's had to miss games two separate times. So it's just a matter of maybe he'll be struggling with it at the wrong time, and that would be very unfortunate. On the flip side, as discouraging as that foot issue was last week, you know, when he was struggling to finish against the Denver Nuggets in transition, in the paint, etc., he has been outstanding pretty much ever since. He's been great on defense. He's taken a lot of crap on the floor. We're going to get fans in the building. I'm sure he's going to hear from them. But people forget Paul George is a big game player. He is a big game player. He has had great moments on the biggest stage in his NBA career. He's got a gold medal. The Phoenix Suns have been outstanding all year, right? It's twice this year that the Phoenix Suns talk smack to Paul George, and Paul George lit them up completely. Last night was an impressive display of what he's able to do. In a lot of ways, he's humbled himself. A lot of ways, he's done a great job of focusing on the task at hand. He's got a great support system on this team. And so I think he's handled it great. I think a lot of people wish that he didn't handle it great. You know, they reach every time he hits the side of a backboard, misses a layup, you know, has a bad shooting line. But he's a two-way player. He's evolved his skill set to handle more pick and rolls, more playmaking and facilitating duties on offense. And he's so good defensively that you can put him around a bunch of second unit guys, and it shows when they start separating leads. He's been outstanding. That's why he's been an all-star this year. The West is loaded. The fact that the coaches voted him in, they see it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Law, but it is now time for everyone's favorite game show, Andrew versus the Beat, where Andrew goes head-to-head against a beat writer. And of course, this week, our guest is Law Murray, athletic beat writer for the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, let me explain to you how this is going to work. There are 8 trivia questions. We're going to start with Law. Law, you're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. It's going to correspond to a trivia question. It could be a super easy question. It might be a very difficult question. If you get it correct, you will get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1 point. Then Andrew will choose a number, and we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been answered. Are you ready?
I am ready. Born ready. Like Lance Stevenson. Let's get it.
Okay, so all I need from you is a number between 1 and 8.
All right, well, let's start with 3.
All right, question number 3. Only 3 players in Clippers franchise history have recorded more than 5 triple-doubles. Bob Kauffman did it as a member of the Buffalo Braves. We all remember him. These 2 players did it as members of the Los Angeles Clippers.
So I'm looking for 3 Clippers or 2 Clippers?
Just there? 2, because I didn't want to make you guess Bob Kauffman. So it's
Bob Kauffman would have been tough.
So it's just 2 guys who have gotten more than 5 triple-doubles, the only Los Angeles Clippers to ever do it, and you have to give me 2 names. I'm not going to tell you, like, one's right and one's wrong. You just give me 2 names. I'll say right or wrong.
Oh, man. Let's start with Chris Paul.
Okay, that's your first guess, and what is your second guess? Yeah.
And my second guess, you know what? Let's keep it going. Let's just say Blake Griffin.
All right. Those great guesses, but that was incorrect. Mm-hmm. Andrew, you have a chance to steal. Who are the 2 Los Angeles Clippers to record more than 5 triple-doubles in their career? Both recorded 7.
I want to guess one of my favorite all-time Clippers, Lamar Odom.
Okay, that would be a guess.
I actually have... actually have a Lamar Odom Clippers jersey in my closet. Really? Right now. So I
do. I got an Odom jersey somewhere in there too.
Yeah.
Why didn't you wear it to the show, Andrew?
I should have. So I'm going to guess Lamar. I'll say Blake.
So Blake and Lamar Odom, is that your final answer?
Yeah. That's my final answer.
Andrew, that is correct.
What?
Oh, wow.
No.
Andrew gets started off to an early lead. This has never happened, Andrew. Congratulations. Okay. You get to choose the next question, Andrew.
7.
Question number 7. The Clippers have had 7 NBA Hall of Famers play for them, including this Hall of Famer, who played a total of 6 minutes for the Buffalo Braves.
Bob McAdoo,
what a guess. I remember I've heard of that name. No, wrong. Law, you have a chance to steal. This guy is a Hall of Famer. We know some Hall of Famers. Played 6 minutes for the Buffalo Braves and therefore is a Hall of Famer that played for the Clippers.
I know this ain't. I know this dude played more than 6 minutes. I just think we should keep it going. So I'm going to say Adrian Tantley and just be shocked at what you say, Alex.
All right. Well, it was a guy who ended up playing most of his career for the Houston Rockets. It is, of course, Moses Malone. Malone. Okay. So that was question number 7. Okay. So it is Law's turn to choose a number.
1.
Question number 1. All right. This is the one I know Andrew would not get. So we'll see if Law can get it.
All right.
In 1981, the San Diego Clippers drafted this future Hall of Famer in the 10th round. The only problem was that he was also drafted by another San Diego sports team the very same day and would go on to make the Baseball Hall of Fame. Who was that player?
Tony Gwynn.
That is correct. Isn't that crazy? Okay, Andrew, you are now down. Right, Law has pulled ahead 2-1. Andrew, which question would you like?
2.
Question number 2. Here's an easy one. Who is the Clippers franchise leader for games played with 750?
DeAndre Jordan was there for forever. I'll say DeAndre.
DeAndre George, your final answer. Andrew, that is correct.
No.
Wow, Andrew, you're on a hot streak right now. Up 3-2. Law, it is your turn.
Let's go with number 5.
Okay. Number 5. This former Los Angeles Clipper holds the curious record for most career 20-point games without ever scoring 30 points in a game.
Come on.
That is a wild question, Al.
So throw a Hail Mary out there and say Eric Piatkowski.
That was a good guess. Unfortunately, it is incorrect. Andrew, do you have any guesses for this? Most 20-point games without ever scoring 30.
Corey Maggette?
Corey scored 30. It was actually the Caveman, Chris Kamen.
Chris Kamen.
Did not get 30.
Okay, Andrew, it's your turn.
4.
4. Okay, the Clippers are one of two current NBA franchises to have never made a conference finals appearance. Who are the other two?
The Wizards.
And?
Hornets?
Any Hornets. That's okay, great guesses, but that was incorrect. So, Law, you have a chance to steal. The only two teams other than the Clippers to have never made a conference finals appearance.
All right, I know this one. Andrew, I was just hoping you slipped up, man. The Hornets are one of them. And that's correct. New Orleans Pelicans are a separate franchise, so they're the other.
That is also correct. It is a tie game. A tie game, 3-3 with two questions left. Okay, Law, you get to choose either question number 6 or question number 8.
Yo, I don't like the number 6, so I'm just going to go with 8.
Okay. This will be a fun one. The Clippers have had 7 different players make an all-rookie first team, and we're going to try to name them all. So, Law, you're going to give me a name. If it's correct, then Andrew will give me a name. We'll go back and forth till you get all of them correct or until one of you slips up. So who is a Clipper that has made an all-rookie first team?
I feel like I'm on the expressive Wheel of Fortune right now. we're gonna start with Blake Griffin.
That is correct. Over to Andrew.
He was a rookie.
Lamar Odom.
Lamar Odom is correct. Back to Law. So there are still 4 names to go.
Charles Smith.
Wow. Yes, that is correct. Charles Smith was all rookie first team. That was the one I didn't think anyone would ever get. Back to Andrew.
Did Eric Gordon?
Eric Gordon, that is incorrect, Andrew.
No.
So Law gets the 2 points. The other names,
ouch.
Terry Cummings, who actually won Rookie of the Year, and then 2 great names, Darius Miles and Al Thornton. I had no idea that Al Thornton's rookie year was that good. Okay, so Andrew, you are now down 5-3, but you have a chance to tie it. This could be your first ever tie. You've come very close. The last 3 weeks, it's come down to the last question. Andrew's had a chance to tie every single time, has not been able to do it. Here is the final question. A Los Angeles Clipper has won 5 of the last 7 Sixth Man of the Year awards. Which players won the other 2?
I know Eric Gordon was 1.
For the tie. For the tie. Can Andrew do it?
J.R. Smith?
Andrew, that is incorrect! Another loss for Andrew. Law, do you know who the other name was? Eric Gordon was correct.
I'm going to say Lou Williams on the Raptors.
That is correct. That's why this question was so tricky, because it was 2 former Clippers. current former Clippers. And Eric Gordon. Wow. Yeah. That was the thrilling episode of Andrew versus the Beat. Unfortunately, ending in another loss for Andrew. Congratulations, Law.
Thank you so much, Law. We appreciate you dropping some knowledge on the show and destroying me in a trivia game. Thanks so much, man.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me. That was a lot of fun this morning. Thank you.
All right, Andrew. Well, it's that time of the show. Time to spin the wheel of fandom again. We have 23 teams left. A lot of good names on here, Andrew. I'd argue 23 good names. So let's see who we get. Let's spin the wheel. Last week, of course, we got the Clippers. And this week, we will be following the...
Is it
going to
be...
Yes! The Golden State Warriors!
Wow.
I feel like I wish this into existence because the Warriors, I am going to make the case next week, have been the most interesting team. Like, everything about them is just so fascinating to the point where I'm on Locker Room after Golden State wins listening to Samus Fondiari and Andy Liu because it's like so good. The content is so good. It's so amazing, all the different factors that are going into this Warriors season. So I'm thrilled about this selection.
Oh, I can't wait. And the thing about the Warriors is like we don't have just one great person on the Warriors for The Athletic. We've got like a billion. So we'll have to sort out who it's going to be. Oh, I don't know who it's going to be. Is it going to be Slater? Is it going to be Ethan? Is it going to be Marcus? I don't know. You'll have to listen to find out. But the Warriors should be a very interesting case study for us, and also another way for me to get destroyed in trivia. So, oh man, thanks so much for listening again to Saturday Slamma Jam. If you have a chance, go to the Athletic NBA Show on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. I read all of those. It means a lot to us if you'll do that. Maybe going forward, at the end of the show, we'll read a 5-star review at the end. So, if you would leave us one. That would mean a lot to us. We appreciate the support. If you could retweet the show as well, we'll tweet it out from our personal accounts and then from the Athletic NBA Show account. So do that. Share it. We really appreciate that. Hope you guys have a great weekend and a wonderful Saturday. And we will talk to you guys again next week.